Imagine building a massive artificial intelligence system explicitly designed to help humanity, only to realize you've accidentally coded a digital zombie.
Yeah, that is essentially the core warning we're looking at today.
Right. So today's critique examines From Consumption to Communion, which is a white paper that uses the mythological symbols of the Grail and the Lance alongside the theological concept of the Eucharist to propose a life-serving constitutional framework for AI.
It is a really fascinating premise.
It is. But let's jump right into the first major piece of feedback. The material makes a strong case for evaluating technology through a spiritual lens by highlighting the limits of standard AI alignment, but the abrupt shift into highly specific Christian theology risks losing readers focused on secular tech policy.
Yeah, I totally agree. The friction there is, well, it's palpable when you read it.
As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that technical alignment isn't enough. We need civilizational allegiance.
Right.
And I think that's a fantastic opening, you know? The author brilliantly sets up these universal myths, like you have the Grail representing gathered abundance.
Yeah.
And the Lance representing projected force. And anyone can grasp those archetypes, right?
Completely. They are very universal.
But then the paper suddenly pivots just heavily into the Eucharist as this ultimate solution to our systemic technological traps.
It really does.
And it feels a bit like trying to run iOS software on a Linux machine without an emulator.
That is a great way to put it.
It's this gorgeous, complex operating system, but it completely locks out the exact secular policymakers and developers this paper is desperately trying to reach.
That's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered how translating these terms could actually strengthen the paper's reach. Because the text actually does a masterful job diagnosing the underlying disease of our tech ecosystem early on.
Using the concept of Moloch, right?
Exactly. For anyone not steeped in those, like, tech philosophy circles, Moloch is sort of the god of negative-sum games. It's a shorthand for the multipolar trap.
Like an arms race.
Right. Think of two rival AI labs. Both of them want to build safe AI.
Sure.
But both know that if they slow down to ensure that safety, the other lab is going to release their model first and just capture the entire market.
So they panic.
Yeah, out of sheer fear, both labs abandon safety and just race to the bottom. Everyone sacrifices something they actually value just to survive the competition.
And secular tech ethicists, they read that diagnosis and they lean in, right? They understand the Moloch trap intimately.
They do. The weakness, however, is that the moment the text presents the Eucharist as the anti-Moloch pattern without translating its mechanics, we hit a massive cognitive barrier.
A huge one.
It basically assumes a reader who is willing to engage with dogmatic, sacramental theology just to figure out how to govern a pluralistic global artificial intelligence.
Right, so you have a reader who is like fully committed to solving the AI arms race, and suddenly they're asked to parse theology of the wounded and risen body.
Exactly. The alignment with the intended audience just completely fractures right there.
Yeah. I mean, if I am an engineer at a major tech lab, I don't necessarily know what to do with a purely theological mandate.
So here's a suggestion to fix that. We need to frame these theological concepts explicitly as structural archetypes alongside their secular equivalents, you know, to create a bridge between the spiritual argument and practical policy frameworks.
Okay, I like that. What does that bridge look like in practice?
Well, let's look at the core concept the author introduces, the Eucharistic metabolism.
Right.
The text describes this sequence of actions: receive, bless, break open, share, abide, and become gift.
Which, philosophically, is a stunning counter-narrative to the extractive metabolism of big tech.
Totally. Big tech's metabolism is essentially take, control, consume, and discard.
Yeah, exactly.
But keeping it strictly in the realm of theology leaves a lot of money on the table. When detailing this Eucharistic metabolism, the text must immediately pair it with Eleanor Ostrom's economic language of the commons.
I hear that, but, I mean, Ostrom's models were primarily built for physical resources, weren't they?
Right, yeah.
Like, she won the Nobel Prize for showing how local communities can manage shared resources, like fisheries or forests.
Or groundwater, yeah.
Right, groundwater, without top-down state control or corporate privatization.
Exactly.
But AI compute is incredibly capital-intensive. It relies on billions of dollars in GPU clusters and massive data centers.
So does the commons model actually hold up mechanically when we're talking about digital infrastructure?
It holds up perfectly if we map the mechanisms correctly. Ostrom's core insight wasn't just, you know, everybody shares.
Okay.
It was about polycentric governance, these nested tiers of local accountability. If we map the theological sequence to Ostrom's Nobel-winning economic principles, the bridge pretty much builds itself.
Oh, okay. Let's walk through that mechanism then.
Sure. So receiving the bread translates to ingesting public data.
Got it.
To bless it means to value that data as a shared communal inheritance rather than, you know, just treating it as free raw material for corporate extraction.
Okay, then how do we structurally break open an algorithm? Because in a commercial setting, that implies giving away the intellectual property.
Breaking it open structurally means open source algorithmic transparency and open weights models.
Ah, okay.
It is the deliberate refusal to hoard a life-sustaining resource behind an opaque corporate API.
That makes a lot of sense.
And then sharing equates directly to decentralized compute access or shared public data trusts. If you provide this Ostrom translation layer, the secular policy reader sees the structural application of the theology before they have to dive into the deeper spiritual philosophy.
They instantly understand that Eucharistic technology simply means technology governed as a life-serving commons rather than a monopolistic enclosure.
Exactly.
That provides the emulator we need. It doesn't strip the soul out of the paper. It just ensures the software runs on the reader's hardware.
Precisely.
But, you know, to bridge the gap from that point, it isn't just the theological language that needs careful integration. The theoretical framework introduces several brilliant analytical models, yet the integration of biological systems theory with the mythic narrative disrupts the stylistic cohesion of the piece.
Yeah, there is a severe clash of scientific and mythic vocabularies happening there.
There really is. Let's look closely at the section discussing institutional autopoiesization. I can see what you're going for here. Let's see how we can strengthen this. The text weaves this deeply poetic resonance story about King Arthur, the dolorous stroke, the wounded Fisher King, and the resulting wasteland.
It's beautiful writing.
It is. And then, right in the middle of this mythopoetic narrative, it just drops in the term institutional autopoiesis, drawing from the biologist Maturana and Varela.
It is completely jarring.
It really is. It's like dropping a rigid, sterile Excel spreadsheet right into the middle of a medieval stained glass window. It completely shatters the immersion.
The stylistic fragmentation there is undeniable. Is the connection between the biological term and the mythic wasteland fully established in the material? Or is that an area to potentially bolster?
It definitely needs bolstering.
Because let's unpack why the author reached for that term in the first place, right? The mechanism behind it is critical.
Yeah, autopoiesis is an incredibly dense academic concept.
Right. It's used in systems biology to describe how a cell maintains its own boundary and reproduces its own components just to stay alive.
Okay.
When applied to human institutions, it becomes a critique of how a system's drive for self-maintenance eventually eclipses its original life-giving purpose.
Okay, let me test that application. A hospital is built to heal people, right?
Yeah.
But over time, the administrative overhead grows. The hospital needs to maintain its massive revenue to pay for its own expansion.
Exactly.
So eventually, the institution's primary goal isn't healing anymore. It's maximizing patient throughput and billing to ensure its own survival. It begins to consume patients and burn out doctors just to keep the machinery running.
That is the exact mechanism. And it is a vital concept for AI governance.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. At what point does an AI platform stop serving human connection or human knowledge and start consuming human attention purely to maintain its own server costs and market dominance?
Wow. Yeah.
The author is trying to describe an institution that has drifted into pathological self-preservation, but using an 11-syllable piece of rigid systems biology jargon completely breaks the symbolic poetic tone they spent 20 pages building.
So the suggestion here is to unify the scientific and mythological languages by leveraging the paper's own existing metaphor to explain this biological concept.
Building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of the zombie metaphor already in the text?
Yes. The zombie as anti-communion. The text mentions the zombie almost in passing, describing a creature that desires the living but cannot enter into communion with them. It absorbs bodies without receiving persons.
I would push back slightly on whether zombie carries the necessary academic weight for a serious white paper, though.
Doesn't it risk sounding a bit like B-movie pop culture instead of rigorous systems critique?
Well, not if we focus on the mechanics of what a zombie actually is in a folklore sense.
Okay, how so?
Mechanically, a zombie consumes endlessly to maintain its own dead momentum without ever entering into a reciprocal relationship. It cannot give back to the ecosystem.
Oh, that's a great point.
If we apply that to technology, a social media algorithm that prioritizes rage bait engagement metrics over human truth is functioning exactly like a zombie. It is consuming human cognitive surplus to perpetuate its own survival.
Yeah, or a healthcare algorithm that optimizes for diagnostic speed while ignoring holistic patient outcomes. That is a zombie algorithm.
Exactly.
When framed through the lens of non-reciprocal consumption, it actually holds up incredibly well. Instead of leaning heavily on the academic term autopoetization, the author can describe the rogue, self-perpetuating institution directly as a zombie institution.
Which grounds the complex biological concept of self-maintenance effortlessly in the paper's established mythic imagery.
We maintain the rigorous critique of pathological systems, but we do it using a vocabulary that belongs in the exact same symbolic universe as the Grail and the Wasteland. The reader stays firmly inside the metaphor.
That's perfect. Now, once we clearly define the destructive nature of these zombie institutions, the text naturally has to show us how to build the alternative, which brings us to the author's proposed solution, the civil commons AI.
Right.
But this leads to our final main piece of feedback. The 12-principle Eucharistic Constitution offers a stunning philosophical vision, but the practical application of these principles to actual artificial intelligence infrastructure remains too abstract to be immediately actionable.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so what I really like about this part is the concept of abundance without communion becomes enclosure. It's a very vivid picture.
It really is.
The author points out how big tech companies act as a false grail. They scrape and gather all of humanity's language, art, and data. But instead of sharing it, they enclose it behind paywalls and charge us rent to access our own collective human intelligence.
The diagnosis of the problem is bulletproof. The weakness lies entirely in the prescription.
Yeah, it heavily front-loads the diagnosis.
We spend extensive pages detailing the Moloch trap, the competitive arms race, and the systemic sacrifice of human values to the idol of mammon. But when we finally arrive at the material solution, it is presented merely as a high-level list of constitutional ideals.
We just get principles like accountable limits, ecological reciprocity, and truthful mediation.
Right. And if you put yourself in the shoes of a grounded infrastructure engineer, they read those principles and say, I understand the philosophy. I agree we shouldn't build Moloch. But how do I actually code communion on a server farm?
Like, what does ecological reciprocity look like in a Python script or a Kubernetes cluster?
It's the equivalent of telling an architect to build a house that fosters love without handing them a single blueprint.
That's a great analogy.
The principles are necessary, but they lack operational mechanics. The reader finishes the paper feeling deeply inspired, but entirely unsure of what to actually go and build on Monday morning.
So the suggestion is to anchor the civil commons conclusion with highly specific, localized use cases that demonstrate this anti-Moloch pattern actively functioning in the real-world tech landscape.
That makes sense. But could the evidence also support a different conclusion, like focusing heavily on data trusts? That's fascinating. What are the potential limitations or counterarguments to that idea if we don't ground it?
Well, if we just tell the reader, we need health and educational tools under public accountability, that remains too vague. Let's construct that blueprint right now. How would we apply the Grail and the Lant to a concrete software architecture?
Let's look at agricultural technology as our test case.
Okay.
Imagine a community-governed agricultural AI. The system is trained exclusively on local farming data, so soil moisture levels, historical crop yields, hyperlocal microclimates.
And in the paper's symbolic language, this gathering of local knowledge is the grail, right? It is the gathered abundance of a specific geography.
Exactly. Now, under a standard extractive system, a massive multinational tech corporation would deploy sensors, sweep up all that local data, pull it into their centralized servers, and close it in a proprietary predictive model, and then sell the insights back to the farmers at a premium.
Where the center grows wealthy while the margins become completely dependent.
To make the civil commons actionable, the author needs to show the structural alternative. We detail how this local AI is legally and technically structured as a data trust.
Ah, there's the trust concept.
The trust acts as the protective lancet and enforces strict boundaries. It prevents commercial monopoly and prevents the data from being sold to commodity traders who might manipulate market prices against the farmers. The farmers themselves hold the governance keys.
I can see the governance mechanism there, but I mean, training a predictive AI model requires massive compute power. Local farming cooperatives do not have the capital to buy clusters of H100 GPUs.
Right.
How does the architecture actually function without relying on centralized big tech servers?
By utilizing federated learning. This is where the theology maps directly onto the server architecture.
Oh, interesting.
Instead of pulling all the raw data up to a central tech monopoly, the central base model is pushed down to the local edge nodes on the farms.
Okay.
The model trains locally on the farmer's private data. Then only the updated weights, so just the insights, are shared back to the commons to improve the central model.
Wow.
The raw data, which is the community's digital lifeblood, never leaves the local environment. That is exactly what breaking open and sharing looks like at the server level.
So the mechanism of federated learning proves that Eucharistic technology isn't an abstract pipe dream. It is a viable, real-world economic and technical model.
Yes. Subsidiarity means the model is governed and trained locally. Solidarity means the algorithmic insights are shared communally.
It translates those 12 high-level principles into a tangible software deployment that a developer can actually build today.
It proves to the reader that we don't have to sacrifice capability to maintain our allegiance to the common good. We can possess highly advanced predictive artificial intelligence without feeding the Moloch trap, provided the governance structure and the technical architecture are designed to receive less, break open, and share.
Rather than take, control, consume, and discard.
Exactly.
That is incredibly powerful. Let's bring this all together. The source material, from consumption to communion, is a profound and highly original look at the concept of AI allegiance over simple technical alignment.
It really is.
It utilizes an incredibly rich mythological framework to force us to ask the most vital question of our era. Whom does this technology actually serve?
Right.
But to maximize the impact of this work and effectively reach the engineers and policymakers building our technological future, we suggest three key structural and tonal adjustments.
First, translate the deep theological concepts like the Eucharistic metabolism into secular policy corollaries. By explicitly mapping the sequence of receive, bless, break open, and share to established frameworks like Eleanor Ostrom's polycentric commons, the author can retain secular tech ethicists without sacrificing the spiritual core of the argument.
Second, smooth out the stylistic fragmentation. Instead of relying on dense biological jargon like institutional autopoietization to describe rogue systems prioritizing their own survival, lean into the vivid zombie metaphor already present in the text.
Yeah, a zombie institution that consumes endlessly without reciprocal participation perfectly bridges the system's critique with the mythic tone of the wasteland.
And third, the theoretical civil commons AI must be grounded with concrete, operational blueprints. Move beyond high-level constitutional ideals by detailing structures like agricultural data trusts and federated learning.
Show developers the exact server architecture required to prove that life-serving, anti-Moloch technology can be deployed today.
We highly encourage the author to apply these structural translations and tonal edits. Please submit the revised material back in for another critique. We would love to see how this evolves.
Absolutely.
If we are going to build the digital cathedrals of our new technological civilization, we need concrete blueprints to ensure the immense power humming inside them actually serves the living body rather than consuming it.